This is a podfic of Ignition by Sathi1013 and read for you by Cheesecake3. The rating is teen and up audiences. No archive warnings apply. This is a Man from Uncle fic, but set in the Mad Max universe wasteland. The relationship is Ilya, Napoleon and Gabby. And the additional tags are crossovers and fandom fusions, pre-relationship and no plot, just vibes. Gabby's been working in the scrapyard 15 years when the stranger arrives. His truck looks like all the rest, patchwork worn and dusty from the road, large padlocked tanks on the back for gas or maybe water, the best barter anywhere. The engine growls with a smooth rumble in the back of its throat, signalling more banked power under the hood than she can spy from her station. It must be well taken care of, bullet holes and weld seams notwithstanding, and she nods approvingly as it rolls past the gates towards the market. She forgets entirely about the visitor, not 5 minutes later, too busy stripping the latest carcass hauled from the sand, a great beast of a vehicle with a spiked carapace and a broken axle, and an engine that might just run again if she works hard at it. She always works hard. She has no other choice. Well, she has choices, but they're worse than this. She couldn't last a day alone out on the salt, she knows that much. And she likes engines better than men. The stranger finds her after evening feast, when she's finishing the cup of thin porridge she dredged from the trough all scrappers get twice a day. "Are you Gabby?" he asks, like he already knows the answer. She stares at him, at his tall, broad shape, partially illuminated by the torches. Even in the half-light, he looks too clean, the patches on his leathers too careful. His face is bare of stubble, and his hair is neatly trimmed, dark curls falling over his forehead, but not long enough to cover his eyes. "No one calls me that here," she tells him. "Everyone here calls her Gab." The last person who called her Gabby left her here on her own when she was old enough to hold a wrench but too small to run fast enough to catch his car as it left a trail of dust behind. "Your father sent me," the stranger tells her, and she turns her back on him. "Liar," she calls him, because there's nothing else to say. "I can take you to the Green Citadel," he says next. She risks a glimpse of him over her shoulder. "That place is a myth," she declares, half trying to convince herself as much as him. His smile doesn't waver in the face of her doubt. "It's not. Don't you wonder where the foundry and bullet farm get the food and water they trade here for your metal? They don't grow it themselves." Gabby hasn't wondered, actually. Every day she focuses on her work, on the next wreck to dismantle, on keeping the other scrappers away from her space, the parts she salvaged to trade for another day of living, the junker she sleeps in and has been restoring on the sly. She doesn't think of what she'll do if she gets the car running again, shies away from the thought of escape, as if dwelling on it will make someone take notice and stop her. "Why me?" she asks finally, realizing that he's waiting for her to say something. To say yes to whatever he's proposing. "Because I know your father," he says. She's pretty sure it's another lie, but he knows her name, came looking specific. "And he's in trouble. I need your help to rescue him." She looks down at her hands, at the two large jumpsuits she wears, seeing the oil stains and the scars and the rugged edges. Does she care about the man who abandoned her here? "If I had time to convince you, I would," he says, looking over her shoulder. It's the first time she's seen him uneasy. but I'm not supposed to be here. It's true, Dross doesn't like his scrappers to talk to buyers. Come with me, Gabby. We'll rescue your father and go to the Green Citadel. And if I break my word, you can take my car and leave me in the salt. Gabby hears a distant shout. They really don't have time. She glares at him. She'll be in as much trouble as him if they find him here, maybe more. Fine, she says, but I'm driving. They escape, but just barely. Most of the wardens stop pursuit once they're free of the wall. Gasoline and bullets too precious to waste for the sake of one scrapper and one outsider, neither of whom have stolen anything. But just as Gabby slows the curves of the trade route that threads through the rock spires of the Deadlands, she hears the growl of another engine echoing off the stone. From the sound of it, it's just one bike with a light load, a minimum of armour and no sidecar. Fortunately, she knows the canyons from her time with the retrieval teams. She goes off-road and weaves as fast as she can through the maze in the dark. Are they still following us? The stranger asks from the seat beside her. Gabby still hasn't gotten his name. Yes, she says, wrenching the wheel to avoid another boulder. How many? He asks. Just one, she tells him. She sees the glint of his smile in the dark before he ducks down and comes back up with something large and heavy. He opens up a hatch on the roof and stands up, bracing his thighs against the seats as he hoists the... Oh, it's a rocket launcher, Gabby thinks distantly, focusing on her erratic path through the canyons. Slow down, the stranger calls. Get him close. She does as he asks, and there's a pause filled with the howl of wind, and then the rocket goes off. A moment later, there's a boom and the sound of rocks collapsing behind them. Is he gone? She asks. You know, I don't think so, he says, settling back down in his seat, his voice grim but with a note of admiration in it. Sure enough, she hears the rattle and ping of bullets at their flank. Hang on, she tells the stranger, and takes a hard right, then an immediate left into a graveyard of rusted out hulks that have long since been stripped of their usefulness. She swings into a spot between two massive wrecks and kills the engine and lights. The stranger nods, understanding her intent, and grabs a rifle from the back before climbing out of the truck and onto a nearby heap as silently as possible. Soon enough, she hears their pursuer, his bike moving slow and careful through the ruins as he searches for them. Gabby holds her breath. There's a pistol stashed in the door she can reach if she needs to, but she doesn't want to make a noise. The rifle cracks in the night. Reloads, fires again. A tank explodes, lighting up the night, the skeletons of old vehicles casting strange, jagged shadows on the canyon walls before disappearing again. The stranger climbs back into the truck and she exhales heavily. Drive, he tells her, and she does. What's your name? She asks him, glancing into a side mirror. Napoleon Solo, he says. Well, Solo, she tells him, pulling out of the graveyard, you should look out the window. He does. You can't be serious. Their hunter has climbed onto the rear tank of their truck, and he's clawing his way towards the cab. His tall, blonde hair close-cropped, skin and eyes pale beneath the streak of grease across his eyes. She's seen him before, patrolling the wall at night. Why don't you take a shot at him? She asks Solo. Somehow it doesn't seem like the right thing to do, he drawls, and she rolls her eyes. Gabby swerves the car to scrape it against the rock walls that hem them in, and their pursuer disappears from her sight. Maybe she's lost him, maybe he's on top of the tanks where she can't see. She'll let Solo handle it. He stands again, curses. Then there's a scuffle on the roof. Gabby has to dodge the flail of Solo's legs before he's dragged up and out. She grits her teeth and keeps driving, now aware that her evasive swerving may throw off her saviour as well as their pursuer. Would it be a loss? She'd have the truck and whatever's left in the tanks in the back, probably enough to trade for safe passage. But safe passage to where? She doesn't know where her father is, let alone the Green Citadel. And it's always better to have someone at her back. So she needs Solo. If she can trust him. She's trusted him so far. Gabby keeps driving. The spires of stone fall away, the maze of the Deadlands retreating behind them, the landscape unfurling into open desert ahead. For lack of a better plan, she steers north-northwest over the rough terrain back towards the direction of the trade route. A body falls to the roof hatch, and she grabs for the pistol in the door, swinging it towards a figure that's landed between the seats before looking to see who it is. It's the warden, looking dazed by his fall, but he quickly focuses on the barrel between his eyes. "You still alive, Solo?" she calls. "I think so," comes the answer from above. She huffs a humorless laugh, then crashes the butt of the gun across the warden's temple, knocking him out. Then she shoves his body into the back. They'll deal with him later. It's 2 days to the bullet farm, which is apparently their next destination. "It's under new management lately," Solo tells her. "The gunpowder queen has your father." Gabby nods. "What supplies do we have?" she asks. "Enough to get us there and to the Green Citadel a day past that. More than enough if we get rid of him," he adds, with a considering look into the back of the cab. The warden glares back at him over the gag in his mouth. His hands and legs are tied too. "I'm not stranding anyone in the salt," Gabby declares. "He can get out at the bullet farm." He's certainly strong enough and a decent fighter. The farm will find a use for him, or he can hitch a ride back to the scrapyard. "All right," Solo says agreeably. She's glad she doesn't have to argue with him about this. If he were ruthless enough to abandon the warden to the desert, she'd be more worried about what he'd do if he found her to be an inconvenience. She tightens her hands on the wheel and keeps driving. They stop in the shade of a high plateau at midday, wary of overheating the engine in the blinding sun. Gabby gets out and stretches, enjoying the relative coolness, letting her eyes rest from the glare of the road. Circling the truck, she knocks on the tanks in the back. They're both half full, evidently. Solo did some trade at the scrapyard before finding her. There's a tarp covering a gap in the back of the bed, right behind the cab, and she lifts it, finding a great spool of wire and a few other useful bits and pieces. He must actually be a trader. She wonders how he met her father, why he'd care to rescue him from the Gunpowder Queen. Before she can voice the questions that crowd into her throat, she finds a book buried beneath the other goods. She's seen books, usually owners' manuals, shoved into crevices in vehicles, covers tattered and pages yellowing and torn. This is larger, the cover stiff and sturdy. There are words on the cover, flakes of gold still clinging to the pressed-in ridges of the letters. "Masters of Painting," it says. She opens it up and sees pictures. Not diagrams of engines, but full-colour pictures of the world that was. City streets filled with people and new cars and bright lights. Tables laden with food. Animals, plants, whole landscapes filled with water edge to edge. Oceans, her old memories tell her from the story she'd heard as a child. She turns the page and sees a spread of green. Forests. Solo appears at her side, pulling the book from her grasp. "Careful," he says lightly. "To some, this is more valuable than water on the salt." "Where did you find it?" she asks. He gives her a smile. "It belonged to someone who didn't know what it was worth." Gabby narrows her eyes at him, suspecting he didn't get it in trade. Stealing doesn't surprise her. That he bothered to steal this is curious. She doesn't know what to make of it, of him. He puts the book back and pulls out a length of chain and a rusty lock. "Let's get our hitchhiker settled," he says. "Stop that," Gabby tells her captive when he struggles against the chain going round his neck. Unless you want us to keep your hands and legs tied. Or worse, Solo tells him, keeping the shotgun steady as Gabby works. And there's a kill switch on the engine, so even if you overpower us both, you'll still be stranded. The warden huffs through his nose, but subsides. Gabby finishes with the lock and unties his gag, staring at him square. Will you behave? She asks. He has a scar high on his cheekbone near his eye. Yes, he tells her, voice hoarse. Swear it, she says. I'd swear on my mother's grave, he replies, after a moment. You remember your mother? She asks. If so, she envies him. His blue eyes falter, glancing away and down. Yes, he says, but that is all he says on the matter. What's your name? Gabby asks. He looks up again. Ilya. They sleep in shifts through the worst of the heat. Gabby's been up for at least 36 hours, half of that scrapping and the other half driving, so she tells Solo to take first watch and curls up in the back of the cab, pistol in hand beneath the old canvas tarp she wads up for a pillow. She dreams of the sound of water. The vultures find them after sunset, their vehicles and gear smeared with clay, blending into the desert around them, and they come at dusk, when the edges of everything are blurred and grey. Ilya wrenches his chain free from the bolt that anchors it to the inside of the truck and helps fight them off. Then, when he's done, he comes back to Gabby and Solo, blood in his hair and on his face and streaking up his arms. He's not injured. They watch him warily. What salvage should we keep? He asks them. Gabby lifts her eyebrows. You could take one of their bikes, she points out. He shakes his head. I can't go back empty-handed, he says flatly. Gabby knows Dross, knows his temper, knows he favoured her despite all her attempts to blend in. He won't like having lost her. She nods. All right, let's see what's left of these smegs. They leave the corpses in the sand. The desert will take their flesh, and the scrapyard patrols will take their vehicles. All that will be left is their bones, bleaching in the sun. Such is the way of things. At dawn, Gabby takes the wheel again, and Solo slowly drifts asleep in the passenger seat. Everything is quiet for almost an hour. Then Ilya leans forward, and Gabby flinches, reaching for a gun. He holds up his hands, empty, then lets them drop into the space between the seats. Why didn't you abandon me to the salt? He asks quietly. She doesn't answer for a long time. I know what it's like to be left behind, she admits finally. He doesn't say anything to that, and she turns to gauge his reaction. There's something gentle in his eyes, and he nods once before sitting back again. She turns back to the road. They aren't bothered the next day, too far out into the salt for anyone to make a camp, and the road too infrequently travelled to make it worth the guzz it takes for a raid. There's no shelter. The sun beats down mercilessly, but Solo stops anyway, shakes out the tarp and covers the cab with it, propping up one side with metal poles to make an overhang. He pulls a folding chair from the bed of the truck and settles into it under the shade with a shotgun on his lap. Ilya paces a few circles around the truck to stretch his legs, takes a few measured swigs of water, and stares at the horizon a while, not back towards the scrapyard, but out towards the salt. It's going to rain, he says after a few minutes. Gabby laughs. She hasn't seen rain since she was a girl. The only clouds she's seen are from dust storms. Has the heat gotten to you? She asks. Yes, he says with a sliver of a smile. But I'm not wrong. Sure enough, a line of clouds builds across the horizon, black and forbidding, with flickers of lightning strobing in their depths, and a dark, patchy curtain of rain draping below like a ragged hem. A fierce wind whips ahead of it, kicking up sand and grit until it pings and clacks against the exposed side of the truck. Solo pulls on a pair of goggles and rigs a rain catch atop the tanks, and Gabby finds a filter from the trade scrap pile to install on the tube feeding into the water tank. Gabby should sleep, but she watches the storm roll in and stare transfixed. The first droplets are fat and heavy, leaving little craters in the softer patches of dirt. She stretches her hand out and the rain seems to avoid it at first, until finally a droplet lands on her ring finger, then her palm. Then the sky truly opens up and she's damped to the elbow where she stands, mostly hidden beneath the overhanging tarp. Ilya watches her, a slight smile on his face, then gives her a hard nudge, so she stumbles out into the storm, rain everywhere around her, soaking her to the skin. She shouts, then laughs, then spins beneath the storm, hair plastered to her face and jumpsuit hanging heavy on her shoulders. Thunder rolls around them like a coiling creature, but no lightning strikes the nearby earth or the car behind her, its violence restrained to the uneven gusting of the wind around them. When she looks over, Solo has stripped his torso down to skin and is scrubbing at it with cheerful determination. He shouts something at Gabby that she can't hear over the storm, so she sidles close and he holds out one hand, offering something. It's a slither of soap, as wide as three of her fingers and about as thick. She bends to sniff it, and it smells heavy and sweet. Not like flowers, they get weeds in the wrecks sometimes with little spiky flowers and a thick scent, but like something she could eat. Take it, Solo says, half shouting over the thunder, she does, wondering at him sharing this treasure from the before times with her. Gabby puts the truck between herself and the men and pulls off her drenched layers, her scrapper jumpsuit and the tight band of elastic around her chest that she salvaged from the rag bins. She scrubs her armpits, her undercarriage, the sensitive crease under her breasts, sparing a bit of extra lather for her hair. The rain washes grease from her hands until they look pink and exposed, cuts and scars standing out pale against her tan. Reluctantly, she drags her armor up around her and returns to Solo, giving back what remains of his soap. He nods to Ilya, who's sitting in the chair beneath the shelter, a distant pleasure in his eyes as he watches the storm. When Gabby offers him the soap, he looks surprised, as if his mind were far away while she and Solo washed. He takes it gingerly, looking down at himself. He still has dried blood caked on his skin and in his hair, still has patches of war grease around his eyes. "Go on," she says, and climbs into the truck, turning her back so he can have some privacy. There's a knot of fabric stuffed down in the wheel well, and she picks it apart, finding spare shirts and pants, each large enough for two of her. She steals a dry shirt and keeps her jumpsuit tied around her waist as she curls up in the back and listens to the sound of the storm drumming over the car. She falls asleep like that, her clean hair clinging sweet against her cheek, and thunder in her ears. When she wakes, she thinks she's still dreaming at first. The truck has been uncovered, and she blinks out the window at a world filled with stars. The salt has turned into a shallow floodplain, reflecting the clear skies above like a mirror. "Good, you're awake," Solo says from his seat behind the wheel. "Please tell our friend here that we're not on our way to attack the Gunpowder Queen." "She has your father," Ilya says, apparently having been properly briefed on their goal while she slept. "This is a rescue. Fighting will be a necessity." "There are other ways to get what we want than blunt force," Solo says, sounding aggrieved. "And when those ways fail, we must be prepared for violence," Ilya retorts. "How much ammunition do you have?" Gabby tilts her head, peering into what she can see of Ilya's face in the darkness. "You're staying with us when we get to the bullet farm?" she asks. His eyes flash as he looks back at her for a moment, then away again. "I don't have to." She's not sure if it's a question, but there's something uncertain in his voice. "If you don't want me to." The truck might get a bit crowded once we have your father, Solo points out. He's not wrong. The back seat of the truck, such as it is little more than a narrow bench, half of it piled high with travelling supplies. Gabby can fit the space easily, but wouldn't fit another grown man. Still. Ilya stays, she declares. There's safety in numbers. And he saved their lives once already. Solo glances back at her, then nods, driving onward into the sea of stars. They stand at the gates of the bullet farm, not knowing what they will find inside. They'll meet Victoria, the gunpowder queen, clad from neck to foot in black mail made of tiny, shimmering scales like dragon hide, carved from sheet metal that drapes to the floor. For the sake of her father, Gabby will betray them. They will rescue her anyway, and her father will not make it out alive. And they will leave as they arrive. Together.